Most people buy a house not on price, but payment.
This is the Worth Report.
Ours change daily. You know, interest rates change daily. A lot of people don't know that. You'll call one day and you say, well, what's your rate? 3.5. And they'll call the next day and it's 3.6. Well, you told me 3.5.
This week on the Worth Report, part two of our conversation with the mortgage planner, Brad Roach, at fortheplan.com and host of The Plan.
I've seen deals fall apart for $500, which is kind of funny.
Wow.
You know, it's like, are you serious? $500. And most of the time, the realtor or me probably would have kicked it in.
Now, here are your hosts of The Worth Report, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
Good Saturday. Welcome to The Worth Report. I'm your host, Nick Wharton, along with Glenn Wright, founder and president of Worth Financial. Each week, we'll bring you news that you can immediately use to manage your financial planning and offer commentary on local, national, and global events that affect your ability to sustain your financial future. Glenn, my friend, how are you doing this morning?
Doing great, man. How about yourself, Nick?
I'm doing tremendous. We're still continuing our conversation on financial planning and mortgage, real estate. And so we have a tremendous guest today, fellow radio personality, Brad Roach, the mortgage planner. You can hear him on the weekends on fortheplan.com. So, Brad, tell us a story where it just sort of took your breath away, where you saw someone who really...
In a good way or a bad way.
Either way, bad way, let's say. Just something that just didn't go right. Someone who called in and just had a circumstance that needed help.
Well, I'll tell you one that is a good story. Mm-hmm. I'll start with that, and I'm sure I can think of a worse one easier. Okay. But I'll tell you one that we just recently closed. It was another veteran. Okay. If you're listening, you're a veteran, we do not charge you anything. We don't charge any closing costs to you. That's not how we do it. We believe you did enough, so we'll pass it on to you. So any of the junk fees that total up for lenders are about $1,000, we take care of that for you. Let's start there. And it's worth it for what they've done.
Absolutely.
But one thing, this guy came in, and he's probably got to be in 20 years, one of my favorite clients closed him a month ago. So it's pretty cool still this far into it. It's like, wow, I really still do like what I'm doing. You know, it's pretty cool as a reward. He had come in and... one of the things he wanted to buy a house. He hadn't bought a house. He's 60-some years old.
Wow.
Never bought a house.
Okay.
And his goal was to buy a house. And I said, you know, as we're talking, why do you want to buy a house? He says, because I'd like to hang my damn flag where I want to hang it.
Wow.
And it meaning that he was in an apartment complex, and his flag was too big to be hanging. So the other thing I want to do is I want to have a grill. I don't want to use the community grill. I want my own grill.
Okay.
So I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. Maybe the guy just wants to hang a flag and grill out when he wants to, not reserve the community grill. And so he had a problem, and his problem was that he had 6 months left on his lease in order to get out of it. So it was $6,000 to get out of his lease, so he had to wait. And he wanted, you know, so we started talking to him and getting a plan together, and I said, well, why don't we ask the seller to pay for that lease? You know, you could buy it now and we could build that into the price because it'll only cost you about $30 a month. And buying a home was almost $200 less than he was paying in rent. So this was all perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we found a seller to agree to pay the $6,000. Okay, which is cool. A lot of people didn't even know you could do that. In fact, the veteran that bought the house was buying it from another veteran who didn't know we could do this, and he was wondering why he didn't get this option when he bought a house. So the story gets a little bit better. So the client, he ends up getting to his apartment to negotiate this lease out for $6,000, and they said, well, thanks for the notice, but we have someone on a waiting list. You don't have to give it. So, well, no, here's the great part. So he's out of his lease, but we have $6,000 left on the table. So what do you do with the $6,000? We took some credit card debt, got rid of all of it, which a lot of people carry credit card debt. We were able to pay his credit card debt with that $6,000 and drop his monthly outgoing by another $200. So by going from renting to buying a house, he saved $400 a month just from that. Now, here's what's cool. We showed up to closing, and I had arranged Lowe's, the home improvement store, to show up with a great, huge flag for him. Bigger than, I don't even know if he can find a pole to hang this sucker on. So we got him a huge flag and a gift certificate to go pick out his grill. I wanted to pick out the grill. My wife said, don't pick out no other man's grill.
So
She was right. So he was very happy to do that. But that's probably one of the best stories You know, a lot of it is listening to a client.
That's ingenious. You know, we've got to get you connected with Robin Keller, the organization that works with veterans.
We do. do.
Outstanding.
Yeah, we're active for Charlotte Homes for Heroes.
Oh, that's, there we have it then. That's outstanding.
We do quite a bit of them.
Wow.
And we got to a point where, you know, Homes for Heroes is for medical, fire department, police, and also veterans. And we got to a point where we're supposed to give like a $500 credit.
Right.
We want to, like I said, we don't charge the cost
right.
on that.
See, Home, that's a great organization. This is
Hope for the Warriors.
Hope for the Warriors.
Okay, cool. We'd love to do
Hope
it. We do Homes for Heroes. Very similar. But again, it's all about giving back. So whether it's XYZ or ABC, if it's a veteran involved and we can help, we're gonna do it.
Wow. So do all veterans typically get VA loans? Is that
you're almost a moron not to. Yeah.
Okay.
I take that back. And part of the reason why is as a veteran, if you're disabled, VA has a you remember the sales tax I talked about on FHA loans?
Yeah.
VA
yeah.
charges roughly 3% on top of the loan.
Oh wow.
But you get in for zero down, and you remember that PMI I talked about? There is none.
Okay.
So that's gone completely.
So you pay
just
that fee one time
on top of the loan. Now, if you're a disabled vet, it's zero.
Wow.
Now, in this particular case, the guy was zero down, and he was a disabled vet and didn't pay any of it.
Oh,
so,
man.
And paid $6,000 in credit card debt. It was phenomenal. It was a great
phenomenal.
Day. It makes it worth doing what you do.
So it didn't come from the $6,000. It didn't come from the lender. It came from the seller.
Seller paid. On a VA loan, a lot of lenders don't know this, but you can build in credit card debt. So let's say somebody came and they didn't qualify because they had a few thousand dollars in debt.
Okay.
You could have the seller. The seller can pay closing costs up to 6%. Well, if I don't have any closing costs and we can have them pay it, let's apply it to something. And VA allows you to do that with their debt or a lease for that matter.
Wow.
A little more creative.
Now, is that only VA? Is that or was that conventional?
Only VA.
Or,
wow. Nice try.
Okay.
Nice try. Yeah, but VA,
wow.
You're thinking of that refinance, weren't you?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Yeah.
No, it's a VA special product, which is cool. So I think just know, you know what the difference is the more deals, if you are going to go get a loan, the more deals that the loan officer can see or has seen in their past allows you to take advantage of some of the things that others don't know. You know, I think that the more money you're handling, the more clients that you see, the more avenues you have to invest and make them money. It's the same
Absolutely.
As lending. It's like the more the real estate guy who was on the last show, the more he sold, the more problems he's seen, the more problems he
That's
solved.
Right.
And you can navigate better for clients and see some of the advantages.
How does someone know between yourself and a broker? How would someone know the difference?
Well, I would hope they tune into the show.
Right.
That would be a good start.
And it could be heard when?
Your show. I don't
your
know when
show.
Yours
when can you hit your
Sunday.
Show?
Mine's on Sundays.
Sundays
10
what
o'clock.
Time?
10
okay.
o'clock.
Excellent.
When is yours on?
11 o'clock Saturday mornings.
Okay, so if you miss us on Saturday, you can listen to us on Sunday. One
there
way
you
or
go.
Another.
That's right.
I forgot the question. He was distracting me with when my show is on. How does somebody know to use me? Google
that's
us.
Right.
You can
that's
definitely
right.
Google us, but
no,
I don't think that's a good start. You can't believe everything.
Right. I love this guy.
How would someone know the difference between someone who's representing the lender versus a broker who's going to shop the deal? Now, they'll know at the closing table, you know, because they're going to pay more money in fees. But how would they know up front?
There's a difference between, you would have to ask, are you a broker or a lender? And if you asked me, like when we started the show, you want to know the difference between a broker. I don't think a lot of people know the difference that there's a broker, a correspondent lender, which is what I do, and a bank.
Lender. Okay.
And a bank. So a correspondent lender means I've got my own lines of credit as a company. We fund those loans and don't shop you ahead of time. So if you ever bought a car, like last time I bought a car, they'll run your credit like at 8 places. So, you know, shopping it for whatever deal. And a lot of it's because of how they get paid, which is, I get it.
That's right.
But it hurts your credit every time you pull your credit. That can hurt. But as you're shopping for the same stuff, it's not as bad. But at that same token, we pull it once, just like the bank would. But then I can sell that to multiple different lenders. So I think you got to ask. Part of it is educating. Part of it is having a plan. You know, why would someone invest money? It's the same question. Somebody investing money with you guys or going down the street to XYZ Investments. There's certain things that make a difference or certain questions you have to ask.
Yep.
You know, I asked a realtor that a while back, you know, what would you ask when you're interviewing somebody to sell your house? He said, that's easy. I said, really easy. I'd interview like 3 or 4 people and see what you're wearing and go from there, you know, and just how have you sold a lot of houses? My price range, what's your marketing look like? He said, no. What's my list to close ratio?
Hmm.
And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, if I list it at 100,000 and I sell it at 99.9, don't you think I'm a better guy than the other lady you interviewed who might have sold it at 88 or 89, 90? He said, instead of me giving you some jacked price to list it at, I get top dollar based on where I list it at. So even though someone may list higher, it doesn't mean their ratio is as good or that margin's good. So I thought that was a great question
That's
to ask.
That's an excellent point.
That's
an excellent point.
So I think each one's a little bit different as you interview whoever you're interviewing. Okay. You know, some advantages are at a bank. You know, if you're going to a construction loan sometimes, there's some good advantages at in-house products or equity lines. We don't do equity lines.
Okay.
You can get a great equity line at a bank. We know great places to do it. So there's some advantage to each, I'm sure.
Are there still opportunities to do the first and seconds? You know, because I saw back in the day where you could do a first mortgage for 80% and then
back in the day, it's still here. It's still 15. Here.
You still can do that?
Yeah, you can.
So I was talking
to a client about that.
So you can do a 95% loan and avoid the
PMI. Yeah, the monthly fee. So they call them piggyback loans.
Piggyback loans.
You know, okay. I promise you, I just talked to a client today. He's buying a five, not just one. I talked to several clients today, but I did talk to one I remember very well.
Okay.
So he was buying I think it was $700,000 house. Very good house. He's buying a great house. Well, he wanted to put 10% down. Younger professional getting started in his career.
Okay.
I wanted to put 10% down, but the PMI on that loan is horrendous. $400-$500. That's a lot.
That is a lot.
So we were able to do a 10% from him, 10% from a bank, which we'll shop for him, get him a good deal on it. They give him away free right now. Then we gave him the 80%. And he was competing. He was talking to another lender about this mortgage and us, which is always, you know, it doesn't hurt to do. I was a little offended, but I got over it. But he talked to them, and they only offered him the one loan. And again, it goes back to, I think the more you do, the more options you have, the more experience you have, it opens doors for a lot of clients, just like that guy paying off the credit card debt.
The better the deal. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well,
experience and exposure.
I think both of those are key.
Yeah, outstanding. Wow.
If you could walk us through the steps of someone who wants to get a loan, walk us through the process of what it takes now to make that happen with you.
Yeah, let's talk about a timeline, because let's talk truth, and then let's talk timeline and plan.
Okay.
What happens with most clients is, hey, I just bought a house, I have a contract, I needed to get approved. That's the first step most people do. What do you mean? You went out and that's like filling up your grocery cart, and you got the checkout line, you got no money. What happened? You know, so it's, you got to prepare to go to the store. So, and that's an easy way to say it. So what I would do if you were looking at purchasing a house, if we could take you back 60 days from now, 60 days, and people say, wow, that's a long time. There's two parts of a file that we look at, you and the house, what the collateral. So we're looking at your credit file and we're looking at the collateral. The house stuff you can't do till you got one picked out. We can do anytime we want. So if you know you're going to buy a house in the next 3 to 4 months, that would probably be the right time to start looking at getting pre-approved, start getting the documents in, and then you just refresh a couple pay stubs in a bank statement. That's probably the easiest way. So most clients, they would go to my website, fortheplan.com, take about a 15-minute application, comes right to us. Once it comes to us, within typically about 2 hours, they get an approval back with all kinds of information, details, an app to download that they can run payments on, amortization schedule, which we should spend a little bit of time of prepaying or investing on that, because that's a big hot topic right now with refinances, what to do with the extra money. But once they get that email, they also have the tools, a pre-approval letter, the cost, the planning that they can know what they need to do. But I think the biggest issue most people run into now is their money. Where their money's coming from, checking or savings account, gift, and how it comes about. Like, you'd be shocked. And if you think about your account or go back to a couple bank statements, you see some weird deposits coming in from Susie gave you this, or my insurance company owed me that, whatever. A lot of different stuff that come
Absolutely.
In.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have to explain that for the Patriot Act, and it's a pain in our butt. It's just part of what we have to do. So if you have, we call them odd deposits, you have to document it and explain it. So we had a guy getting $5,000 from his dad. Well, his dad just put it in the account. That doesn't work that way. I don't know if they're looking for terrorist money or how they're looking at it, but you can't just say, here, I got my money. It's in my account. It needs to be seasoned. We're going to go back 60 days and look at where all that money came from. Here's the worst part. If dad gave you that money, not only are we going to look at your account, we're also going to go ask dad to see his account that he transferred it from. Now, tell me your dad would like that or not. Mine would not.
No.
Right. So now we're all up in his business, which is it's a little invasive. But if he would have gave him the money a month or two earlier, getting his plan together, I would have thrown that bank statement out and seen his money seasoned in there. So there's that kind of planning that we can do. If you apply soon enough, we can take a look and get you rolling that way.
Typically 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, I would do it at least 2 months as a minimum.
But what happens when your client's a business owner? I would think there are probably different dynamics and different criteria that you have
thought.
To get.
Yeah, right? They're very different.
Okay.
That is something that I think it's the same planning time frame, but I also think you need to have somebody who knows how to read your tax returns, because there are certain advantages that we can add back as income that some loan officers may not. And I hope part of that industry is not working on files now, but you want to have a fair look at it and put you in the proper position. We had a guy, you got to do profit and losses and stuff like that. You want to, he had, I'll give you an example.
Please.
A client had a profit and loss he had to turn in year-to-date P&L, which shows how much money he'd made year-to-date that would match his last couple years. Well, they had a line item that was on her P&L that said salary. And then the bottom net income was about $6,000. Now, we're in June, July, so you've only made $6,000 this year. Last year, you made $50,000. Well, no, I've made more than that. But see, her P&L, the net income as the owner, showed she made $6,000.
Right.
And I said, well, where's your other money? Well, I started taking a W-2 income, which was the employee payouts on one of her line items.
Right.
Most people are going to look right to that bottom line and see it. So I said, well, you're paying yourself. Why don't we update your P&L? Because that's not what you were doing last year. Show it to me that that money went to you as well so that it goes in right. And that's what I meant earlier by going into underwriting right and having it documented properly. That was just a one-line item that she needed to at least note so that we could read it properly and qualify it right. But you got to look at that stuff. There's a lot of dot in the I and crossing the T right now in our business for sure, making sure that it goes in right.
Well, you mentioned the Patriot Act. Say more about that and how that governs the practice.
Well, like at the bank, if you've ever, and I'm not sure what the limits are. I'm not an expert. I have a disclosure for it. One of those forms you mentioned we added to the pack.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you go to the bank and you're trying to deposit $10,000 or take out $10,000 or $990, whatever it is, they have you fill out special forms.
Okay.
Well, as we see deposits, I believe a lot of the rule of thumb, and I don't know as though there is a perfect one from lender to lender, but let's say you make $10,000 a month and you had a $5,000 deposit, that's going to get questioned. Mm-hmm. Where'd that come from? And you have to document it. And if you don't document it, we're going to deduct it from what's in your account and not use it at all. What if you were counting on that for your down payment?
Right.
Now, here's what makes that even more complicated. If you're buying a house, and like that guy that just went into contract, he has to have reserves, which is payment reserves. We denied a guy today because he has no more money in the bank. So he was going to buy a house.
So you mean, let's bring up that other example. So the guy was buying a $700,000 home. Not only does he have to have the $70,000, but he needs more than that.
Showing reserves.
Okay.
And here's what, and reserves means payment reserves. So if his payment was $2,000, we want to see $6,000 in his bank. Well, this other guy that I was working on, he owned another house. So we wanted to see 6 months on the new house, and I wanted to see 12 months on his other house.
Whoa.
Right. So, and he's like, but I don't need that much. So he ended up getting a gift from dad for $20,000 that just sat in his account.
Well, that's nice.
Well, it is nice. Nice dad.
Yeah.
But also, we got into dad's account. He didn't really like that. So it goes back to if he would have done more planning, knew the reserve requirements, some of those things, we can try and we're not perfect. But man, if we can navigate a few of those items to make it a little easier on you in the stressful emotional purchase, that'd be phenomenal. We had a guy that I just was on the phone with prior to coming in to the studio today, and he was trying to buy a house USDA, which is another product that's out there, zero down. The house has to fit in a certain neighborhood. Usually it's rural. And he qualified credit score, 620, somewhere in there, so he could lesser credit requirements, zero down. Only had that little sales tax fee or mortgage insurance, but not a lot monthly. So it was a great loan, but he had a house that fit in that neighborhood. Well, he had no more money in the bank. He was down to $115. They won't qualify him at that.
Wow.
But what would qualify him was having 2.5 payments in his bank account. And all that is done by a stupid computer sometimes. So it isn't a lot of shaking and moving or adjusting. It's what the computer says. So as we put in, he had a little more money in the bank, he started to qualify. So yeah, having your ducks in a row and having that plan together is huge.
Right, and if we go to the wrong bank, they just deny you, and you think, wow, I can't do anything now. That's interesting.
Well, and it may be one bank's guidelines versus the other. There's what's called in our industry called overlays. So they take Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are the ones who issue 99% of the rules, and then Wells Fargo or a bank or Chase, whoever it is, and I'm not picking on any of them, but they'll say, well, I like that rule. But I kind of am picking on him.
Yeah, you are. We got a little bit, but that's okay.
If you could see him, he was smiling at me. I was picking on him. But they have the rules for Fannie and Freddie. Mm-hmm. And then they say, but we really want to make sure this is there and this is there on that one rule. Mm-hmm. So they might have an overlay. Well, we don't have any overlays on our products that we underwrite and sell in pools or batches of 40, 50 million that go out. Mm-hmm. And so that other banks do. So if you got, like you got denied at Bank of America because they had a overlay, and I turned around and sold it to them because we didn't have an overlay, but they buy our loans. So you ended up paying the same place you got denied from. They were actually irritated. The client was kind of irritated with that one.
Oh.
Wow.
I would have been too.
I suppose
every month they were irritated.
Oh, man.
I suppose your breadth and depth of knowledge of different banks and their products has got to be really helpful to clients.
It can. It can be. And I think there's certain advantages to knowing which ones do what. You know, mm-hmm. And some, like I said, we don't do every loan that's out there. But I did do quite a bit of time when we moved there to find out who does them and why you should go there and get it done. And I think that if you can't get a loan done or with us, we can at least point you in the right direction or put you on the right plan to make that happen for you. Sooner or later, you know, if you can't get it today, put it in the right spot, the right area that they can start getting qualified and working on certain things. We've got people to help with credit. We've got that automated system that can tell you there's so many tools available now.
With everything going on in Europe, for sure, again, it looks like that interest rates will probably stay around the same here.
We got a good
because
dip
of what's
recently.
Going on globally. So with that being said, it looks like refinancing should go up some because the interest rates are still low.
We're up already.
Are they?
Really?
I think over the last I'm a 95% purchase, and over the last 3 weeks, probably I'd say I'm almost 50-50. That many people. Well, and you think about it, housing, we mentioned earlier,
right.
Seller's market, so you're not seeing as many contracts come in, but you're seeing those rates down, and people are taking advantage of refinancing, kind of taking advantage.
When does it make sense, in your opinion, your expert opinion, for it
question.
To make sense?
That's a great question. It depends on how long you're going to stay in the house. There's what's called a break-even point. You know, how much did I spend to save that money? So if I'm going to say, let's get you a refinance, and forget the rate. Whether it's 2 or 4, I don't think it makes any difference. If I'm saving you $100 a month, regardless of the rate, if I'm going to charge you $2,000, it's going to take you 20 months to get that money back. You follow me? So you save $100 a month, I'm charging you $2,000. Even if it's not out of pocket, what's being added to the loan? And I don't think a lot of people watch that. Every penny that you pay to get that deal done needs to be looked at. How you pay it. Like a lot of clients will say, well, do I need any money out of pocket? That don't matter. You're going to pay it over 30 years if I add it to the loan.
Right.
That money's that money. It's right. How much money it is. So 20 months to break even. So if you're not going to be there longer than 2 years, don't do that deal. And that's a break even point. I think that's important. So we've had a lot of clients where they had $115 a month he was going to save. And I said, well, how long are you going to stay in the house? And he said, well, I'm going to be there. I'm probably going to die here. I mean, not that old, but that's so you're going to be there quite a while.
Right.
He wasn't 80 years old getting a 30-year fix. He's like 30, 40 years old. So
oh, wow. Yeah.
He's going to be there.
Okay, he's going to be there for a while.
So he says. And plans change. So we try not to make that break-even point stupid. Like 5 to 7 years is long enough, you know, to
right,
make that.
That's right.
Because things change. Careers change. A lot of stuff changes. Yeah. So he says, well, $115 to do all that paperwork, man. That just doesn't seem like it's worth it. And I said, well, what if we put you on a 23-year loan at the same payment you're paying now? He said, oh, I'd do that.
Yeah, same thing.
Well,
yeah,
right? It is the same thing. Yeah. So you did the math quick. Yeah. What I was getting at him was take this monthly savings that we just gave you, because you're not hurting. That's just a nice steak dinner for you. I got you. So why don't you make that same payment you've been paying for the last 3 years, and I'm going to lower your payment this $100, $150, whatever it was, but keep making that payment you've been making for the last couple of years. That starts going directly on his principal and starts compounding some of that years off. Or let's flip this. You know, let's flip it. Maybe he is going to move, but that $150 could go into a different account you guys manage.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think compounding $100 is not what we're talking about. We're talking about that 4 or 5 years of mortgage interest you're saving. We're talking about putting into account. I've watched, I don't remember
picture.
What TV show that is, and this is probably way, way below what we're talking about, but there's a TV show where they take, you guys watch TV, right?
Yeah. Okay,
you're looking at me like I'm going way off here. I'm not going that
TV?
Far.
What are you talking about?
I'm not going that far.
We're just fascinated.
Yeah.
All right. So on the TV, they got a bunch of people out there putting a sticker up for when they started their retirement. You ever seen that one?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And you see how they started their retirement. They talk about how much money, how little can grow, and the people who started it earlier, even with a little bit of money, got way further ahead than somebody starting late. I think that's what we're talking about. That $100 stretches so far, especially with a firm like your guys.
That's right. That's right. The power of compound interest is just amazing. It certainly makes sense. So you're saying look at the threshold. So if you're going to stay in your home typically 3 years or more, it possibly makes sense to go ahead and look to refinance if you're going to save some money.
You bet. I think a lot of people get fixated on 3.5%, 4%, 3.99%. I mean, I think they get that. I got to have 3.75%. Well, they get that number in their head.
Well, I've heard that you shouldn't refinance unless you're going to go down by 2 percentage points or 1.5 percentage points and all
based on what we just said, who cares?
Who cares?
And it really has nothing to do with that. It depends on how you're going to break even. So let me give you
how
a different example.
Okay.
Let's say you're at 6% right now, and I can drop, which would suck. That would suck. But you're at 6%, and I put you at 4 today, which 4, we know rates are almost 3.5. But let's say I put you at 4.
Right.
I'm going to do it for absolutely free. Zero. I'm going to add no money to your loan. I'm not going to charge you a dime. And you're going to say nothing's free. You're right. Instead of me giving you 3.5, I'm going to give you 4. But you just went from 6 to 4. That makes sense.
It makes perfect
sense. But you could also, what if I had you at 4.5 and I'll give you 4 for free? Now, that's only a half point. Would you do it for free? The question would be, there's no cost to break even, but we're resetting the loan now. Those are factors you start. The right answers you take into account. Everybody's got a different pickle. Right. You have to look at it that way.
So the seller's market, how long do we have?
That's an excellent question. They didn't answer that on the last show, the real. I think that that's a tough question. I think as the rates stay down, more people are jumping in. I mentioned our guidelines have loosened up over the last couple of years. More people are qualifying.
Do you see that continuing as well?
Guidelines loosening up?
Guidelines are going to
get... Not necessarily, no.
You don't think so?
I guess it may play a part who gets elected. That could. We had looser guidelines under Republicans, so that may be a factor to look at. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they're very tight compared to when I started. You know, I started back in 93 and we had just those basic couple programs. Okay. We're back to that and a little bit better instead of having all the extra. So it's almost like in my 20-some years of doing this, I started learning one way. We went through this cycle of everybody and their mother and their dog, as long as they have a pulse, can get a home mortgage.
Right.
And then we went back down to no one's getting a loan. We'll never give you any more money.
Right.
We've gone almost back to where I started from.
Yeah, you know, one of the... not so good outcomes of that whole period was the notion that, you know, loans being made by or to poor people, you know, helped drive the whole disaster as if they were making their own loans.
Yeah.
I mean, that was absurd. And certainly that left a bad taste in a lot of folks, you know, minds.
That they were given bad loans felt like they were taking advantage of?
Well, both. But the perception was that this segment of the population, in a sense, through other regulations that made it easier for folk to get loans, was the problem.
Man, that's I think it's tough. I think as a home buyer, borrowing $150,000, $200,000, whatever you're borrowing is probably your biggest investment when buying a house, unless you got a badass car.
Absolutely.
You know, that happens. Some people will tell you got to go get a toilet in that car.
Right. Yeah. That's right. There is that.
So,
there is that.
But really when it comes down to it, I think you have to know what loan you're getting into. You have to understand the program. You have to understand the product that you're getting into. And if you don't, go somewhere else and get understood.
But, you know, let me just say this. I know we're nearing the end of our show, but, you know, when you look at those forms you have to fill out, you know,
no one's
30, 40, 50 pages. I mean, my God. I mean, you're signing stuff. You can't possibly know what the hell you're signing.
That's true. There, you know, when I go, here's what's funny. Back before, you would come in and we'd have to explain them all to you. That was 20 years ago. Now you do what? E-sign. And no one reads anything. So click, 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 and they're done. One thing I think that out of all the 40 forms you sign at application, there's three or four that we point out. The 1003 or an application is what it's called. It has on the one page your payment, crystal clear, and your rate. The first page has your rate and term, fixed or not fixed.
Got it.
The next page has on your payment with tax insurance included, which you should be looking at that whole nut you have to crack every single month. All of that included, HOA, whatever. The third page shows all the charges, closing costs, sale price, and all your credits and what's due at closing. And I think if you could clearly understand those three pages, then you're okay to buy that house, because there's not one thing when you get to the closing you're going to be able to negotiate. Like, well, I don't really, they know the deed. You look at all the stuff. You can't negotiate one paragraph. You either sign it or you're out. And I think that's where a lot of people say, well, geez, if I don't sign it, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. Understand the terms of what you were getting into. And as a sidebar, a lot of the products you're talking about that ticked a lot of people off or felt they were taken advantage of don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to do a lot of, they were called 228s, two-year fixed, and after 2 years, they pop you 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%. Right. You know, how high can we?
Whoa.
And that, well, the more we adjusted you at that period of time, the more the lender made. So profit was based on that, and that's what got dirty. Now, here's what was worse, is after that two-year period, we usually had what was called a prepayment penalty. So if you pay us off after the 2 years, now if you aren't going to take the higher rate, we're going to sock it to you another way.
That's
so
right.
We'd charge 1% to 2% prepayment penalty. But again, let's go back. These were people that didn't qualify.
Right.
They were at a 580 credit score. They knew they were going to get a higher rate. So instead of me putting you at 10, how about I give you 7 the first 2 years, and you go get cleaned up? And everybody thought, what? I'm going to get cleaned up. They didn't get cleaned up. They bought another house and put zero down on that one for their aunt. And I just think that there was a pattern of not only brokers who were dirty with it.
Right, who didn't care whether they got cleaned up or not.
No, didn't care. And I think there were clients that were careless with it.
Sure.
And I think because that money became so easy, I made mistakes on what I bought. And it was because you saw all of the pattern of this housing going up and up and up. And you got to grab a hold of that. Get me some of that.
People want a piece of that quote-unquote American dream.
Absolutely. It was part of it. And then when all of that went down in value, you know, that's when people said, man, I overpaid. Or, you know, and well, it brings it full circle. Mm-hmm. It's a seller's market. How high does this go before people say, man, that's a little too high, or that bubble? You know, and that's what everybody talked about.
That's right.
So Nick, what I really gathered from Brad's presentation was, if Trump wins the election, then we need to stop what we're doing and get into the mortgage business, because the mortgage industry is going to change immediately.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. In Canada, too.
Yeah, in Canada, too. There we go. Right, of course. So, no, really, really enjoyed everything that Brad talked about. I just see so much on how people make poor decisions. Everyone's so busy. I read an article the other day about how we are as Americans, how we don't even vacation anymore. Right. We're taking our work on our vacations. So thinking about finding the right person who's going to help us navigate through this maze called a mortgage, right. It just makes a lot of sense for someone to use Brad.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I agree totally. Well, Brad, this has just been an amazing show. The insight you provided is more than financial news you can use. This has just been great. How can our listeners hear your show? Just tell.
Well, I talked a lot on this one. They ain't heard enough. They haven't.
No, they haven't. I'm going to be calling you after this show.
They can go to fortheplan.com, the number fortheplan.com, or 855-4-THE-PLAN. Either one will get right to me. You can go on application and on the website and see all kinds of different show recordings we have. Download the app for free. Run some payments. But we're happy to give free advice and help you out with your plan.
Excellent. Well, you've been listening to the Worth Report. Thank you so much, Brad.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
This has been The Worth Report with your host, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright. To learn more about Worth Financial and to speak to one of their advisors, call 704-731-0121. That's 704-731-0121. Or log on to worthadvisors.com. That's worthadvisors.com.